attribute to the years I spent at Michigan Lottery. I haven't been that lucky to actually buy lottery tickets, but hopefully that will happen at some point. Well, I wanted to again thank everybody for coming out. I also want to recognize my wife. She's right in front of me. How are you? Actually, this is a very special day for us because actually today is our 20th wedding anniversary. So when I knew obviously we're coming to our 20th anniversary, and I said, honey, I want to make this really special. I'm going to take you to the Grand Hotel in Mackinac Island, and we're going to celebrate this right. And what could be more special than being at the Mackinac Conference for an anniversary? So, but it's great to be here and have an opportunity to talk a little bit about my vision going forward. And I'm certainly humbled to be running for the U.S. Senate. We'll look forward to having an opportunity working closely with all the members of the chamber, working closely on business issues, moving Michigan's economy forward. You know, I've been spending the last, the last year now, traveling all across this great state. They've been part of our listening tour, listening to folks and issues that are of importance to the people. And certainly the number one issue without question is getting Michigan's economy moving forward. That's what I've focused on since day one as a member of the United States House. It's been about jobs and opportunity, particularly in the greater Detroit area, but really the entire state, because that's how we're going to move our economy forward and making sure the middle-class families have their opportunity to get their piece of the American dream. I'll mention a couple issues that I'm working on right now, and then I want to open it up for questions because it would be a lot more fun having some interaction other than just hearing me drone on. But one issue in particular that I focus on is really transforming Michigan, which I think is one of our incredible opportunities, is transforming it into a transportation hub, logistics hub for the region as well as for the entire country. You know, if you think about where Michigan is positioned, and if you look throughout human history, if you are a state or if you're a locale, if you're a city, and you're located on an international border between two major financial centers, you flourish. That has been that way throughout human history. And you look at where our position is as a state and as a region, right between Chicago and Toronto. There are incredible opportunities. It's why I am a strong supporter of the new international bridge crossing, and I certainly applaud the chamber for being such champions of that. We have to make that a reality, and right now I'm engaged in working with the federal level, working with Senator Stabenow and others to make sure that we get funding for the plaza. As you know, the Canadian government is fronting most of the money, which is wonderful that they're doing that, but we need to have a customs plaza that will house U.S. government officials, and in my mind, that has to be paid for by the federal government to make sure that that project goes forward, and we're going to continue to aggressively pursue that. The other thing that I'm also focusing on is the new rail tunnel, which I think is absolutely critical for us, too, between Windsor and Detroit. And we have an old rail tunnel that was built back in 1909. A lot has changed since 1909, and one of the most important things is railroads now have the double containers that no longer fit through that tunnel. We have to build a new tunnel there, make us a logistics center. It'll be incredible opportunities for us as a state. And then my real dream is that after we do that is to convert that old tunnel into high-speed passenger rail. And one thing that I'm committed to do is to make sure that we can try to get funding so we can have a high-speed rail corridor from Chicago to Detroit, to Toronto. It would be absolutely transformative. Jobs that would be created from the construction of that as well as the bridge. But this is about jobs going forward for many, many years going forward. I've also been focusing a great deal on the auto industry, of course. I am co-chair of the Bipartisan Auto Caucus in the House, and was intimately involved in the auto rescue. I'm proud to say that auto rescue has been a great success, thanks to what's happened with GM and Chrysler. We should all be very proud of that. I think that's going to be a big difference. We're going to talk about that in the campaign. It's certainly a difference between where I am and where my opponent is, where she would not have supported that rescue, which I think you can't be a senator from Michigan and not support something that is so important for our number one industry and our really the lifeblood of who we are in the auto industry. But having said that, let's look at where we're going to move forward. And for me, that's all about innovation. It's about entrepreneurship. I also co-chair the House Caucus on Innovation. In fact, I just had a panel at Tech Week, which was down in Detroit last week, where we had folks from all over the country descending on Detroit and all the exciting stories of what's happening in Detroit, particularly innovation at Detroit Ventures, for example, with what's happening there. In fact, if you close your eyes and you walk into Detroit Ventures and open it up, you think you're in Silicon Valley, but you're not. You're in Detroit, Michigan, and it shows you what we have going on. fact, talking to a lot of the tech folks who were coming in, even from California as they came in, they talked about that this is really like Silicon Valley was years ago, when people actually talked to each other and cooperated and all tried to help each other. That's not the case in Silicon Valley so much now. It's much more silos as we go forward. So those are things that I'll work on. I think I'm going too long already because I want to open it up for some questions. But I just want to say a little bit about my philosophy, and I think I've shown that through my work in the House as well as the state legislature before that. Because I spent 20 years in the investment business. I come from a business background. I'm a business person. And when I come to public service, I want to bring that approach, which is really about just practical problem solving. It's about rolling up your sleeves, trying to find some common ground. I'm as frustrated as I think everybody in this room with what you see in Congress, where you see too much finger pointing. You see people making everything a political issue, as opposed to trying to figure out, what do we have in common? And actually, when you boil it all down, we tend to have more in common than we have differences, and yet we don't focus on it. So I'm about bringing people together in a bipartisan way. I worked in a bipartisan way. In fact, we just passed a bipartisan bill through the Senate after we passed it in the House on a unanimous vote. So we can do things on a bipartisan way, which actually reduced some regulation in the auto dealer space. And I think we got to simplify things, get rid of outdated regulations. I was a champion of that. We were able to get it passed. But to me, that's really the essence. And I think that's what people in the state of Michigan want in the Senate. That we want to make sure that someone's going to Washington, passionate about this state, shares the values of middle-class families who are struggling each and every day, but someone that will hit the ground running from day one in the U.S. Senate. When we go to the Senate, we've got 49 other states with senators that are fighting aggressively for their state and for resources for their state. We need a U.S. senator that can do the same thing, that has the experience, has the understanding, and has the passion to stand up for middle-class families in the state. And that's what I look forward to doing. I think I'll earn your support. Thank you so much.
So this is how it will work. We have Jason over here and Lindsay. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and one of our mics will find you. And at some point, I may have to say stop. And so please do.
How much time do we have?
We have plenty of time.
Okay, good. So are you going to select folks?
I will select folks. Anyone? Yes. And please state your name.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Meisner. I know that to many of us in this room, fostering an environment in the state where small businesses can grow and thrive and continue to provide jobs, that's important to many of us. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences supporting small businesses and what your vision would be to continue to provide leadership or growth for small businesses in the state?
Yeah, great. As I mentioned briefly in my opening comments, I do think that's really the heart and soul of what's necessary for us to move forward. Is we've got to support the small businesses that generate most of the jobs. As important as the auto industry is, and I'm a passionate defender of autos and manufacturing and believe that that's something that we have to protect and foster growth, and still we've got to be able to diversify and get into the small business areas as well. One area that I've particularly focused on, I serve on the Financial Services Committee in the House, and one area that I focused on is financing for small business, particularly after the financial crisis. It was very, very difficult for small businesses to get the loans that they needed to start a business, to grow the business. It continues to be very tough for a number of small businesses, also depending on what areas that they are in. So seeing that, I worked and actually authored the State Small Business Credit Initiative, part of federal legislation that passed that provided state and economic development agencies with money, including the MEDC here, and I worked with the Snyder administration on that as we looked for funding for those kinds of programs around the country. I successfully got it into law. We provided resources here to the state of Michigan for that kind of work, and I'm happy to say that the amendment that I authored has created resources for the MEDC to use and has been credited with creating 6,500 jobs here in the state of Michigan. There have been over 50,000 jobs created all across the country with the State Small Business Credit Initiative. And in fact, I was there about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Secretary Liu, the Secretary of the Treasury, came out to look at one of the businesses that got funds from my amendment. It was Detroit Stamping, a small stamping plant. In the city of Detroit, had a very difficult time getting loans to put a new stamping press in. They were able to provide that. We were able to provide that funding to them, and they created 60 jobs. And in those 60 jobs, I think 45 of those jobs are going to be Detroiters as well, folks who need good-paying middle-class jobs. So We need to replicate that as well. I've now introduced legislation to basically evergreen that kind of fund, because we've seen the incredible success that we're having around the country, helping those kinds of businesses with either collateral support or capital access programs to be able to continue to fund that. The other area that I think is important for small business, particularly I mentioned the innovation, the innovators as we go forward. For example, supported the research and development credit that passed in Congress a couple weeks back. I actually broke with most of the members of my party to vote for it. I think it's absolutely essential that we give incentives for companies to put money into research and development to create more jobs. The problem with the R&D credit by itself, however, is that it only goes primarily to very large companies that have large tax bills. And so I think half of all the companies are $1 billion plus. My concern are those small entrepreneurs, those innovators, the ones that you see in Detroit and Detroit Ventures and other places. They aren't paying income tax, so an R&D credit doesn't do much good for them. So what I've introduced is legislation that says if you're a small company, $5 million or less in resources, have only been in business 5 years or less, you can use an R&D credit against your employment taxes. And that's something, they all pay employment taxes. We want them to hire more people. They're going to pay employment taxes. They can use that credit. They're investing in research and development. Use it to reduce their employment tax, which will create more jobs, plus it'll allow them to free up even more resources into R&D and therefore create more jobs. So those are the kinds of things that I work on regularly. I'll just tell you, in closing, as I've been traveling all around the state, one of the things I do, I always do a Main Street tour. It's for me, every town that I've been going in all across the state, I want to talk to those business owners that are on Main Street who are struggling and want to know how we can be helpful, because that's going to be how we move our state forward. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Congressman. Anyone else?
Thank you, Congressman. My name is Fred Hoffman. First, thank you for celebrating your anniversary with us all today. We're happy that you're with us. I share your passion for the auto industry, as you know, and want to say thank you to you for the key role that you played in helping to save the auto industry in Michigan and save the jobs in Michigan. In that vein, can you talk a little bit about public-private partnerships and about how that saving the auto industry taught us a number of lessons as to how we can work together with government being not necessarily the only force at the table, but one of the seats at the table, but government as well as universities and private companies and NGOs and others all at the table to help create jobs?
Well, I think that is ultimately one of the best roles for government, is to be that kind of partner, bring those kinds of partnerships in, and really leverage private capital. I think the example that I just gave from the State Small Business Credit Initiative is an example. I mean, there's federal money that backs up some of the guarantees for those loans, but it's banks that are providing those loans. It's private capital that's providing those loans, but it frees up, just in Michigan, it frees up hundreds of millions of dollars of lending that wouldn't normally be put into the private sector, but it comes from the private sector. It's not government resources, not taxpayer money. The taxpayer money, though, leverages the ability to do that, which I think is so important. But you mentioned the auto industry. The other thing that I think is critical is that we continue to be on the cutting edge of producing the next generation vehicles, so that Detroit and the Midwest continues to be a world leader in autos. You know, I'm very proud of this region. I'm proud of our industry. I'm proud of the incredible intellectual capital that we have, particularly when it comes to engineering talent that resides in the auto industry, not just the big three, but all of the wide network of auto suppliers as well. A statistic I love to tell my colleagues in Washington is that we have more engineers per capita than any other region of the country, which gives us an incredible competitive advantage. So then how do we leverage that, to your point about public-private partnerships? And one way that I think would make a great deal of sense, and one that I've gotten a great deal of support both from industry and from labor and from environmental groups, pretty rare to get all three of those all on one piece of legislation, but we've introduced the Advanced Vehicle Technology Act, which will create some of these kinds of partnerships when it comes to fuel efficiency to create those next generation vehicles. The act changes the way government has done things in the past too. I don't believe I'm just picking a certain technology. I think that's a real mistake for government to try to do that. What it does is it changes the rules to allow the science and the technology to drive the process, and it lets the market be the determiner as well. But it allows those resources to leverage private sector coming in, particularly smaller auto suppliers, and that's where really most of the innovation occurs. It's those small companies, those small startups, and you want to see even more dynamism in the Detroit area and throughout Michigan if we are able to do that. So that Advanced Vehicle Technology Act, I think, will do that. I've been able to get it through the House once. I didn't make it in the Senate, so we need a couple senators over there that are going to work to make that happen. But as I mentioned, it passed by a large bipartisan majority. It had the environmental groups, it had the industry groups, it had labor. Those are the kinds of things that I really focus on in trying to find creative ways to leverage the incredible skills and talents we have in this great state of ours. And it's all about middle-class families having the ability to have the jobs of tomorrow.
Congressman, I just want to make sure we get as many questions in so we can shorten up those answers.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
So now you're reminding my wife. So. This is my anniversary.
Yes, Sarah McClure. A few years ago, you voted for cap and trade, which some feel would be particularly detrimental to Michigan. What is your current position on cap and trade?
Well, I think it's a broader question of how we deal with climate change and what is going to be the best way for us to do that and deal with carbon emissions. I think climate change is an issue that we have to deal with. I think the science is pretty clear that we have to deal with it. Now the debate has to be what is the best way to go forward. My personal view is the best way to go forward is really to incentivize the new technologies, new alternatives that are coming online to deal with reducing carbon emissions. To me, that's really the best way to go forward. And Michigan is in a very unique position to do that. I think we can be very excited about it. In fact, when I was, I taught at Central Michigan years ago, and actually I did a panel with folks from industry all across Michigan that were involved in some of these technologies. And actually the title of my panel was, Is Climate Change Heating Up Michigan's Economy? Because it actually has the potential to do that. And I'll just give one example of a company and what kinds of things that we can be doing and why we need to have federal policies to continue to foster this. Now the example is Dow Chemical Company. When you talk about Dow Chemical, a lot of folks think about an old world chemical company, but they're actually a leading cutting edge environmental technology, new cutting edge alternative technologies in solar and geothermal and insulation. I was at their house in Midland not too long ago, which they have a house in their neighborhood. And I believe it costs roughly 15% or so more than the average house. But it uses these new solar shingles that the Dow has. They're not the solar panels. They look just like shingles you would see on on your house, very aesthetically pleasing. They had geothermal, they had insulation, all the stuff the company makes. And this house uses zero energy off the grid, it's a net zero off of the course of the year. Now sometimes it uses energy, Nancy. Sometimes it uses energy. My friends are DTE consumers. It uses energy, and sometimes it puts it back on the grid. But what's really transformative, they're saying in the next few years, they're gonna have houses that generate more power than they use. I mean, that is transformative to think your residential house will generate more power than it can use. And then, of course, I have a good idea on what we use the excess power for. And that would be plug in your Detroit-made car into that vehicle, whether it's a Chevy Volt or whatever it may be. So you can go out and have your house power your ability to go down and get a gallon of milk at the store as well. So those are the kinds of things that we can do. We can do it here in Michigan. We've got the abilities to do that. We've got companies that are doing it. They're incredibly innovative. And if we're going to deal with climate change, which I believe we have to, let's do it in a way that really transforms economies in ways that creates hundreds, thousands of middle-class, good-paying jobs in America, not outsourced overseas. That's what I would do.
That was a little better, Gary.
That's a big question. Sure, big question.
Right here in front.
Good morning. My name is Tom Short. And I'm wondering what your position is on the way the federal government taxes corporations, especially on their foreign profits.
On foreign profits? Well, I'm a believer that there shouldn't be any incentives to basically outsource. So that's what you're referring to, where you can have basically lower tax rates for doing business overseas. I don't believe that. We wouldn't need to be bringing money back. Any kind of tax reform has to be focused on domestic companies investing in domestic plant equipment and workers. And I would really like to tie those kinds of tax benefits in particular to where those jobs are located. If jobs are located in the United States, then there are tax benefits for companies that are dealing in the United States investing in that. In fact, I have proposed legislation to help us along those lines. It's pretty simple legislation. Right now, a large company has to report every year how many employees they have. I want to take it a next step further and say, I want to know where your employees are. So report how many are in the United States, how many are in China, how many are wherever it may be. And that way is from a public policy driving standpoint, we can have a better understanding as to how our tax policies are influenced to meet the one overarching goal of tax policy has to be enhancing the ability to hire American workers and invest in American plant equipment. And I think that's a step in order for us to drive the kind of tax policy that I think is critical for our country. How's that for a short
answer? That was great.
A big question. So, sorry.
Hi, Congressman. Dana DeBell here. I was wondering, you talked a little bit about bipartisanship and some of the things that you've been able to accomplish in a bipartisan way. And if you're elected to Senate, what are some of the things that you will look to, at what are the opportunities that you see for bipartisan and Senate and House agreement on issues that we can move forward that'll help Michigan continue to move forward?
Yeah, and I think, and I mentioned partisanship in my opening, because to me that's where we have to go as a country. We have to restore faith in our government as well. But, you know, the public opinion polls for Congress are a little high right now. I think there's a number of diseases that are more popular than Congress right now, so that's not a good position to be in. And part of it is the bickering that we have and the fact that we aren't getting together in a bipartisan way. I always strive to do that. We'll continue to do that in the Senate. It's a big reason why I want to go to the Senate, because I think it's absolutely essential that you have people in the United States Senate that are looking at ways to work across the aisle. I have done that with, I mentioned my caucuses, the auto caucus, which I've expanded dramatically as the new co-chair. I have a Republican co-chair from California. Traditionally, the auto caucus were a bunch of Midwestern folks, which to me didn't make much sense, particularly as we went through the auto crisis. It was pretty clear people around the country didn't understand how important the auto industry is to manufacturing, and manufacturing is important to everybody in the country, that we needed to broaden that, and we needed to do it in a bipartisan way. So I have 65 members of that caucus now. Half are Republicans, half are Republicans, or Democrats, rather. That's half and two Republicans. That's not good. That's not good math. So half Democrats, half Republicans, and coming together for some common ground. The bill that I just passed regarding reducing some regulation in the for auto dealers came out of the auto caucus to work together to do that. But I think if we, I think we have some of that common ground. I'm working right now with Cory Gardner, a Republican out of Colorado, to reduce the deficit, to deal with cost cutting, which we have to do. We have to put the federal deficit on a sustainable course. It's not sustainable now. We've got to reduce some spending. And there's some common sense things we can do. In fact, the GAO comes out with a report of programs that should be cut. We want to have hearings on those. They don't get hearings now. We also have bills that we've authored to have mandatory up and down votes on some of these cuts, which can save tens of billions of dollars. And those are things that I feel very comfortable working with Republicans on the other side of the aisle, and I think we can build some bipartisan consensus to do that. Our focus just has to be on practical problem solving. And, you know, I'm not naive about this. And when I went to Congress, it was more partisan than I had feared when I first got there. But I have been able to navigate that, work in bipartisan, find the ways that we can make that happen, and we'll continue to do that the same.
All right, we have time for just some more questions. Jason.
Good morning, Jeff Smith, right over here.
Where?
Over here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This here.
My question is regarding public education in the city of Detroit. So what kind of programs or processes are you backing to help promote and strengthen public education in the city of Detroit?
Well, the one aspect, that, and a lot of that, as you know, is done at the state level, but the one area that I have always been passionate about and want to make sure that we're protecting in the city of Detroit, as well as all core urban areas, as well as all across the state, and that's early childhood education. To me, that is the most critical thing for us in education, is to get in very early with these children. So the Head Start program, which is, I believe, is probably the most successful federal program in my mind, ever. Every dollar we invest in a young child before they get into kindergarten has about a $7 return to the taxpayers. For the accountants in the audience, they'll like that. But also from a basic human element, it's just the right thing to do to help these children who are coming from sometimes very, very difficult backgrounds, as you know. But if you're not put on that path early, it's very difficult to ever get back on the path. The statistic is so clear when it comes to reading that if a child is not reading at the fourth grade level, by the time they're in fourth grade, they will never read at grade level, no matter how much intervention is done later. It's very rare that a child is able to catch back up to where they should be. Those are very frightening statistics. So we have got to focus very early with young people. That's why I was so dismayed with the sequester, the way it passed, where there were just these across-the-board cuts. I believe we have to have cuts, and I talked about some cuts with the bill that I'm working with a Republican from Colorado. We've got to do that, but we've got to do it in a thoughtful way. And a thoughtful way is not cutting it so that tens of thousands of children are no longer in Head Start, that are no longer getting that opportunity. Yes, we're saving money in the short run, but we are losing so much money in the long run by not making those kinds of investments. So my passion has always been that. It continues to be in the city of Detroit. It'll be my passion all across the great state of Michigan that any child who qualifies for that should be in that program, because it's going to make a world of difference to them and a world of difference to our society.
Last question, and this one's be a little short.
This should be a short answer.
Yes or no?
My name is Fern Espino, and I'd like to know, back to the proposed bridge, how are you going to influence the release of that money, and in what time frame?
Well, we're working very aggressively to do that. In fact, I had working closely with the administration. I invited Secretary of Homeland Security Johnson to come in to Michigan just recently. In fact, thank you to the Detroit Regional Chamber. They hosted the event. Senator Sabin was there. Other folks were there. It was very important for me to bring in the Homeland Security Chief. We also, not only do we have the Homeland Security Chief, we also have the Commissioner who's in charge of Customs and Border Patrol. These are the folks that are going to have a big say as to how we allocate the money for that the plaza. They came in. I took them on a tour. We toured them around, both the current facility where the new facility is. We had a great panel, great participation from members of the Detroit Regional Chamber as well to make the case. I can tell you they went away extremely impressed and understand the importance of this investment, not just for Michigan, but for the whole country. This is a national investment. And so I think what we want to do is we want to get that kind of pressure with the administration, but also we need to have some criteria. You know, back to some of my points that we've got to have more common sense and practical business kind of sense as to how we allocate money. The bill that I've introduced says that when we fund customs plazas, and we do on a regular basis, it should be based on the amount of traffic that actually occurs at that site. They should get priority. And if you look at it based on priorities, the Windsor-Detroit border crossing was number two on that list. Number one is Laredo, Texas. Laredo, Texas just got funding for a customs plaza. So take number one away. Now that puts Detroit number one with this authorization legislation. And then actually, Port Huron is four on the list, but they would be number three. So Port Huron is there as well. Port Huron needs one of these customs plazas as well. So this should not be, and there have been some folks saying this is Detroit versus Port Huron. It is not about Detroit versus Port Huron. This is about Michigan being ahead of everybody else in the country. Because we're number one and number three on that list, we should be getting both of those plazas funded. And that's why you need to have to elect a U.S. senator that's going to go and fight that battle and make sure it makes it a reality. And I commit to you all to do everything I can as the next U.S. senator to make that a reality. Thank you so much.
So a couple of housekeeping matters. Congressman's going to lead and participate in our podcast. Former Secretary of State Terry Lindland will come up. And because we're now at 11:20, I know my Republican friends are counting the minutes. We will go another 20 minutes since we started at 11 to make sure that Secretary Lindland has an appropriate time to participate with you and answer some questions. So again, I'm going to ask if and I didn't ask it about, but I know Secretary Lane is really good at answering questions specifically and precisely to the point.
To be short,
and
it's like,
comprehensive. but I'd like to just thank her for being here today. And please, Secretary Lane, it's your floor.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's so great to be here. And Terrence, thank you so much for being the chair here. And Sandy, our president and CEO, for being the chairman of this Detroit wonderful chamber. And of course, Henry's for serving as conference chair. And of course, Miller Canfield for sponsoring this event. I'm Terry Lindland, and I'm running for the United States Senate. And I want to start by telling you a little bit about myself and how I got started. I was born and raised in West Michigan. I grew up in Granville, where my grandpa Henry and grandma Jenny started a family business after my grandfather had immigrated from the Netherlands. And after farming for a while, Grandpa and Grandma started their own business. Now, they built this small motel and trailer park for their sons, my dad, Paul, and Uncle Bob. Now, this was the early 1950s, and Grandpa and Grandma actually worked together as a team. They were partners. My grandma actually did the books. So every time Grandpa and the boys would have an idea about maybe starting a new business or expanding their business, they'd have to go see Grandma. And Grandma would look at him. Now you understand she was Dutch. She would go, how are you going to pay for that? And I'll tell you, it was that mix of listening, fiscal responsibility, and working together that helped them be successful. Now, I think we need a little more listening and fiscal responsibility and working together down in Washington, D.C., and I'd like to bring that. Now, Governor Snyder is listening to folks here in Michigan. He's balanced the budget. He's put money in a rainy day fund. And his hard work and accomplishments are moving our state forward, and they're making us the comeback state. Now, of course, Detroit is central to the success of our state. As Detroit goes Michigan. And I know Detroit's been through some tough times. We all know that. But like Michigan, it's on the way back. Detroit is attracting new businesses. Young folks are coming downtown and moving in. I'll tell you, every time I'm downtown, I just get so excited about what's happening. I see a great future for Detroit and work with everyone to help me make Detroit a success. But I feel too often bad policies are coming from Washington, D.C. and are going to slow our comeback. That's why Governor Snyder needs a partner in Washington, D.C. Washington is broken, and now Washington is trying to break Michigan. I believe Washington has declared economic war on Michigan with high taxes, overregulation, gridlock. Government overreach is hurting Michigan families, jobs, and paychecks. The ability to start a business and build a future is in jeopardy. That American dream that my grandparents had, I believe, is now in jeopardy. And as a small business owner, I know that Obamacare's mandates and taxes are too expensive and will hinder growth. Workers are seeing their hours cut from full-time to part-time. Over 225,000 Michigan families have lost their health insurance despite being told they can keep their plans. And as we know, emergency visits are on the rise when we're told they would be falling. Many Americans lost their family a doctor despite being told they could keep their plans and their doctors. And now countless families are forced to select from coverage plans that they don't need or can't afford if simply the prices are too high. We need to repeal and replace Obamacare so once again we can have the best healthcare system in the world. I believe in healthcare reform that truly makes coverage affordable, accessible, and doesn't crush our economy. We need to allow people to buy insurance across state lines so that rates can be competitive. We need to extend the health savings accounts so that folks can have more control of their healthcare dollars. And we need to allow people to buy insurance plans with pre-tax dollars, the way employers do. And we need to make plans portable so they can transfer to a new job. And we need to make sure that people with pre-existing conditions aren't denied quality and affordable coverage. And most importantly, we need to allow people to keep that patient-doctor relationship. That is very important. When you're going through a long-term illness, it's very important that you have that relationship. Washington's bad policies aren't just limited to health care. Federal policies are threatening our access to secure and affordable energy. And now we have a billionaire radical from California pushing policies like cap and trade, a carbon tax that would increase gas prices by 20 cents, and it costs up to 96,000 Michigan jobs. If Washington were listening to Michigan voters, we would have built the Keystone Pipeline. I listened to Keith, who owns a business, Delta Industrial Valves in Niles, Michigan, and he told me he could hire more workers, and it would also create more jobs in his community if the Keystone Pipeline was built. A recent poll showed that two-thirds of Michigan voters support building the Keystone Pipeline because they know it will create American jobs, some right here in Michigan, and it will increase our American energy security. But the administration and Senator Reid are playing politics with the Keystone Pipeline. I believe we need policies that ensure Michigan business and Michigan families have available, low-cost, reliable energy. That's why I support all of the above approach to energy, and I will always advocate for more safe and reliable forms of energy that lower cost while still protecting our Great Lakes. It's clear that solutions are not coming from Washington. Let's bring them some Michigan solutions. As I listen to talks being discussed here today, advanced education, entrepreneurship, and legislation, that is where our solutions will begin. These are the tools that Michigan will need to advance and grow. And as we discuss solutions, I'd like to think back how when I first got involved. When I was 17, I volunteered for a guy named Gerald R. Ford to run for president. Now, President Ford faced a divided country and a failing economy. And it's important to remember President Ford's warning not to expect too much from government. He said, A government big enough to give you everything you want is a government big enough to take away everything that you have. Solutions do not come from more government. Solutions come when government listens to the people and works with people. If we're going to grow our diverse economy, we need to listen to small business owners, create an environment that encourages innovation and entrepreneurship, and I will work to provide relief for Michigan businesses so they can hire more workers, grow their business, and grow their economy. Taxes need to be lower, fairer, and simpler. I see firsthand that Michigan businesses spend way too much time and money and resources navigating the 73,000 pages of tax code. We need to have predictability so businesses can plan ahead and grow. As your senator, I will work to create opportunity and a level playing field. We need to end the practice of special interest perks and the government's picking winners and losers. When Washington raises taxes on one business in order to give a tax cut to another business, that's unfair. And this is common in Washington. Our state can compete with the best of them, and we can outwork them if Washington would just listen. I also believe in trade policies that benefit American workers and our allies. Today's global economy demands the ability to easily export our goods, services, and technology to the world. As a border state, Michigan understands the importance of international commerce, and that's why I support funding and building the Customs Plaza for the new international trade crossing. In the wake of 9/11 and increased security, Michigan needed a solution to get workers and products across our border with Canada. As Secretary of State, I worked with Homeland Security and the Department of State to create the enhanced driver's license. It made it easier to get across the border for folks to go back and forth. We should also work to attract the world's best and brightest by increasing the number of highly skilled workers in Michigan and allowing more H-1B visas. This will help us grow and make us stronger and competitive globally. We need government that works for the people rather than against them. It's clear Washington is not listening to Michigan. I believe in listening because that's how you solve problems. When I was Secretary of State, I listened to my customers. If there was an issue, I listened to the people. We evaluated the problem, we took action, and we got things done. We didn't just write a letter or call for a study. We got things done. We put as many of our services as we could online, eliminated the need to come to the Secretary of State office at all. And as Secretary of State, I partnered with business. Business is good. And government should work with business, as I did with our new car dealerships, to issue license plates directly at the dealership. The customer could purchase a new car and drive out with the new plates. We also partnered with commercial trucking and industry to get permanent trailer plates, save businesses time and money. We installed 24-hour self-service stations so that people could update their registrations without having to take time off from work and family. We listened, we did what worked, and in the process, we made government work for the people once again. It's about understanding business and knowing how to work with them and making government more efficient. I also listened to the people who worked for me and instituted a series of programs to increase flexibility and a leadership training program that put more women on the path to management. Apparently, some call that a war on women. I wanted to make sure that the employees who spent 8 hours a day in the office had the tools and resources to do their job, because a happy employee makes a happy customer. And while every other government agency was cutting jobs to cope with the budget cuts, we were able to meet our budget without laying people off. We did what worked because we listened. And in the process, we made government work for the people once again. You know, people always ask me how I plan to get things done in such a partisan environment in Washington, D.C. Well, as you know, as Secretary of State, I had a Democrat governor and a House, but we were able to implement all our changes that we did at the Department of State. But the other thing is I also grew up in a family business, as I mentioned when I first started. And during the week, sometimes Grandpa and Grandma, my dad Paul, and Uncle Bob, they didn't always agree on the direction of business or what they were going to do and how it was going to work. So, you know, on Sunday, Grandma would make her pot roast at the back of the motel where she lived, and we'd all come together and we'd have dinner together. And we'd all get back on the same page, because we all understood that as a family, to be successful, we had to be in one direction, we had to listen to each other, and we had to work together. So now I believe that Washington needs to work and listen to families, business, and taxpayers. They need to get back on the same page. I will listen to you. I will evaluate the best options, take action, and get things done. I'm Terry Lynn Land. I'm a mom. I'm a business owner and a public servant. I'm asking for your vote so that I can proudly represent you in the United States Senate and serve this great state of Michigan. So thank you so much for coming. I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to a couple questions.
Question right here, and then
My name is Rob Castellew, and you mentioned repeal Obamacare, and I'm right here in front of you.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Repealing Obamacare and replacing, what are some of your thoughts on what you would replace it with?
Well, as I mentioned, oh, it does work. Okay, good. As I mentioned in when I spoke earlier, is that we need to do a few things. We need to make sure we can continue that patient-doctor relationship. That's just critical. We need to make it become more cost-effective, being able to purchase it across state lines, so we keep the cost down and have more options. We need to make sure we keep that pre-existing condition available when you get your next insurance. And also, too, I think it's just important that you have choice. And that needs to be what we need to do best. And we need to take care of those who cannot afford it. So those are the kind of things that I would propose and I would institute when we repeal Obamacare.
Good morning, Secretary. My name is Marcy Brogan. I know you've taken some hits on social issues that might affect women. I've never seen anything or read anything about specifics about how you feel about this. I know some of your supporters have been vocal, but I'd like to ask you right now, how do you feel? You mentioned war on women. How would you answer your critics?
Well, thank you for that question. I appreciate that opportunity. You know, I've always supported women in everything I've done, whether it was as a local clerk's office in business or the Secretary of State. I support equal pay for equal work. I always have. I've always encouraged women to move ahead and be successful. And we created programs at the county clerk's office that created flexibility for folks, men and women, and also a program that was helpful for men and women to get leadership training and to get the skills they needed to move up to management jobs. And I'm very proud of the fact, when I left both the clerk's office and the Secretary of State's office, we had more women managers than when I started.
Jason.
Hi, good morning. Guy Williams.
Right,
right,
yeah, I see you.
How are you?
Lights.
I was curious about your comment around the pipeline and safe energy. There are many businesses that have started in Michigan in the last decade around what many would call clean energy. So my question is, how do you size up those opportunities versus the pipeline, which basically would support only one industry, which is the Marathon Petroleum and refinery in Detroit, and the generation of petcoke there versus other types of safe energy sources?
Well, we need safe and reliable energy. And I think it's important that we have security in our energy. So we need to have as many options available. You know, we have the auto industry that needs fuel to produce our great cars. We have families who are hurting here in Michigan. We can't allow the prices of gas and oil to go up. So we need to have that. And it's about jobs. I mean, as I mentioned, Keith, who's in Niles, he would be able to have more jobs, and his community would also. So it's about jobs, it's about making sure we have safe and clean energy, and it's about security. And I think all those things are very important, and over 70% of Michigan actually wants and supports the Keystone Pipeline, and that's what I would vote for.
Hi, I'm Patty Poppy from Consumers Energy. Secretary, we've had success with a program called Helmets to Hard Hats, which is to employ veterans. I'm curious what your ideas are and what your thoughts are on re-employing our veterans in Michigan businesses.
Well, thank you. You know, it's very important. We need to respect those veterans that have served our country, and we need to honor them. And by doing that, we can help them with job skill training or with education, and I think that should be a priority. They deserve the best. My father and my husband's father are both veterans, and I have a cousin who was in the military also. She served too, and I think it's very important that we do that for our veterans. So that would be something that I would support and work with to make sure that they have the services, the skilled trades, and the education they need to get a good paying job, because we need that here in Michigan, and we need those veterans because they have the skills. They're very organized people. Anybody would be honored to have them working with their company or business. So that would definitely be a priority.
inspector.
Yes, my name is Otis Jones. It's more of a veteran question as well. My nephew just got back from serving 3 tours, 2 wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. And I haven't been talking to him over the holiday. And their fear is how they transition back, given the struggles that they have mentally from the experiences in the war. What would be your policy on dealing with some of the mental challenges that our soldiers and our young people have? I happened to read an article in a paper this morning that said 60% of the homeless people in our country are veterans. So what are your thoughts about assisting in those two areas?
Well, that's two things. One is the veterans facilities that we have need to be able to have timely, not these long wait times. They need to be able to get in and see a doctor. And if they can't, they ought to be able to have the option to go out to the private side and be able to do it there. And I see that the Veterans Administration now is allowing that. But they need to get the care they need. There's a lot of new opportunities out there to deal with those types of health issues, to help those veterans get back and integrate into society, get a good paying job, and be able to have a family and have that American dream. So that should definitely be a priority. With more and more soldiers coming back, I think it's important that we do make that a priority and that we have the services available in a timely manner for our veterans. And coordinate with the state, too. There's a lot of state and local programs that are out there. In counties, as you know, I used to be the county clerk. We had a veterans office in the county. One of the things, too, that I've seen, too, in fact, I was on the phone with the county commissioner in Kent County just on the way up here yesterday, and they were talking about those issues and feeling that some of those things weren't addressed. So they're actually going to upgrade their program in Kent County as far as putting more resources towards it to serve the veterans locally. To me, locally seems the best way to do that, where your family and friends are. We all know that you can best get healthy and you've got that family network and support. So to me, as the federal government could help the states and the local government so they could stay in their communities and get that support that they need.
Jason.
What's your position on the proposed regulatory changes to the internet? Are you a fan of the FCC's current hands-off net neutrality approach, or are you a fan of working with the larger internet service providers to allow faster service to companies that can afford to pay for it and slower service to companies that can't?
I think the internet should be free. You know, it is a great source of information. It's the opportunity for people to talk. I'm a Twitter fan, I'm on Twitter. And it's a great way to connect with people. So I think that's a very important part of this, and especially in emerging countries and growing communities. It's a way to actually communicate, and I think it's very important to have that available to everyone.
Question behind you.
Okay.
Somebody hide in the back.
Hi, Bob Kittle with Auburn Hills. I think we all agree the need for fiscal stewardship out of Washington, but at the same time, we have a lot of challenges, particularly with regard to our aging transportation and infrastructure systems across the country. How are we going to handle that dichotomy?
Well, first of all, we ought to be able to actually talk about roads. Yes. First of all, we want to make sure that we get our fair share back from Washington. That's no doubt. So I would fight to do that. Then also to partner with our state and our governor and our local units to make sure that we can help them effectively use the resources that they have and combine and work together to make sure that happens. I mean, I understand. I drive those roads, too, across our great state every day. And we need to have good roads, good transportation for our trucking industry, for our tourism, for all of that, and our farmers, too. And make sure that they can get their product across our roads and deliver it to their customers. So I would definitely be a priority on that. I know that. I can read the polls too. And we see on there that that's number one priority in Michigan. So we're going to partner with our great governor and get that done.
We have time for one more question. Bueller. Bueller.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no. No, hang on.
Just a quick follow-up on that last issue. The Hank Cooney, chair of the conference and on the board.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
On that last issue, the state or the House of Representatives just passed a bipartisan bill in the state to raise revenue to fund $1.5 billion worth of road improvements and other infrastructure improvements in Michigan. Waiting to see what the Senate does on that. The question is, are you supportive of that type of, because that's going to cost people money. It's going to cost us money at the pump. Is that something in a bipartisan fashion that you'd be supportive of?
Well, first of all, we need to get that through the process as we did, any legislative initiative and action. That's a state issue. I will help from the federal side where we can, but that's a state issue with their resources. They need to make their own decisions on that. So we'll let them have that play out, and then we'll see how that works. And, you know, whatever way we can help at the federal level is what we do.
Well, that's it. I'd like to thank Secretary Land for joining us. Formal session's over. We're going to have a little informal, so if you want, because I know some of you are probably just a little shy, and both candidates have agreed to stay around for a few more moments and answer any questions you may have or some personal introductions. But thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the chamber.
We don't mind doing it together.
I'm willing to do the group, to be honest with you.
I need to know where my camera is, though.
Okay, hold on.
Are we all set?
Hold on.
You all set, Mikey?
We'll be.
Thank you.
Tim's going to lead this anyway.
So are you just to give in? Is that what you do?
You think Mr. Snowden is a patriot or a traitor?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very important that we have security. And those folks that actually, you know, break the rules, and we do not, haven't been through a trial yet to understand exactly what happened. But if you break the rules, you have to pay the price.
Would you call him a traitor?
I think we have to go through the trial process. If he breaks the rules, he has to pay the price.
Well, did he do anything courageous to help the country?
I think we have to go through the process, and if he breaks the rules, then he has to pay the price.
When you say that you think the internet should be free, are you talking about broadband infrastructure, free access nationwide?
Right, right.
So you think if you were in Senate, you would push for the creation of a nationwide broadband infrastructure?
No. We were talking about one specific item.
Right,
there.
Net neutrality, which is
right.
About access or faster internet, not about
right.
Free.
Right. Not. I think that. Okay, guys. I can't talk. I talk to my hands full. I think it's important that, you know, that the costs don't go up so people can't have access to the internet, meaning that what he said, if it's faster, then they're going to charge more to the consumer.
All right.
Did Mr. Peters state your position correctly that you avoided the bailout for the autos?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Peters said that you did not support the auto industry with the money for the industry.
I've always supported auto workers. Detroit put a Michigan on wheels. They're the backbone of our economy here in Michigan. It's great that the autos are doing well. I support the autos. And what I want to do is go down to Washington, D.C. and make sure that we have a competitive environment here in Michigan, that you don't over-regulate, that you don't over-tax, and you don't overburden Michigan families. And if you do that, we can continue to have a great auto industry in this great state. We can have an economy that works for everyone, and it'll be a wonderful state to live in, which I love living in.
But were you opposed to the 2009 bailout?
One more question.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you opposed to the bailout in 2009?
I think it's important that we have support our auto workers. I think it's important that we make sure that that never happens again, that we don't overregulate, that don't overtax, and that make sure that our auto industry can have the ability to grow jobs, create a great economy here in Michigan, and I support the auto industry.
Would you have voted for it?
Thanks so much, guys.
We
have enough time. And that was Chad's question. Thank you so much.